WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Urban youth culture has a literary language, but it's usually rap music, not literature. My guest, Abraham Rodriguez, is trying to get that urban sound on the page. He's lived in the South Bronx all his life, and now he's writing about the people he grew up with. Many of them got hooked on drugs and became teenage parents. Some of them are already dead. Rodriguez has been writing since he was a kid. He's won several short story awards, and his first collection, The Boy Without a Flag, has just been published. The first story is autobiographical, about a Puerto Rican-American boy who refuses to salute the flag. The rest of the stories are about the kids he says most people see as the enemy.
I always felt writing this kind of material that there really wasn't any place else that I could find this kind of material. I mean, I've never seen it anywhere. Growing up in school, I never read it anywhere, really. I was never exposed to a Hispanic writer like Peary Thomas or something, who is Puerto Rican, who wrote a book somewhat like this ages ago. And because I also felt that the kind of world that this represents is a real world. It's happening. It's something that a lot of kids are trapped in, and nobody's really given a voice to it, you know, so I felt really motivated to just write some kind of stories that I could really relate to, that I think other kids can relate to, too, in that sense, you know.
There's a passage that I want you to read from your new collection of stories. Tell us something about the character before you read it.
Okay, this story is called Babies, and it's about a girl, a 16-year-old girl who's a heroin addict, who's just found out she's pregnant. She hasn't told the guy she's living with yet. They're both addicts. And knowing that she's pregnant has sent her into this whole sort of a reevaluation of her whole life and thinking about babies and growing up and stuff like that. And that's pretty much what the story is about, when, you know, coming to the decision that she has to make about whether she's going to have a baby or not, and whether it would be wise to have a baby or not, considering her condition.
Now, before you read this, I should say that we changed some of the language, because you do use a lot of street language.
Yeah.
Because that's the language that your characters speak in. So we toned that down.
Somewhat.
But I should say before you read it that the language that you're using and the expletives that you use in it have a kind of musical function too, in a way.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think that it happens with a lot of writing that really works. You know, like when you read a book, that you pick it up and it just carries you right along. It's like a kind of rhythm thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good book is like a great song or a great music. It affects your heart like a kind of sound, like a kind of rhythm. You know, and people talking on the street have a kind of rhythm, you know. And I'm trying to capture that. I think I'm getting a little better at it as I go along. But I'm trying to capture that rhythm. And then it's also hard to capture that rhythm as people speak it and then write it, so that when you read it in the book, it doesn't just screw you up. Like, oh my God, what's all this stuff? You know, I can't read this. You know, it's kind of tricky to also put it down in words so that people can read it and get that musical feeling without their eyes tripping over it, you know?
Right, I know what you mean. Well, let me ask you to do the reading, and this is from Abraham Rodriguez's new collection of short stories, The Boy Without a Flag, Tales of the South Bronx.
I hate it when people say I'm a junkie and shit, because it's really not true. I know I got it all under control, and plus, I know I can stop anytime I want. I did once, for 3 whole days, and then, since I knew I could take it or leave it, I took it. Because, I mean, what else is there? Why shouldn't I feel sweet? Some Hispano been asking me where I picked up such a habit, because around 149th, there ain't no 16-year-old girls on H. The fact is, I used to hang out in the village with this funky guy named Matt, who used to do crazy stuff, like steal cars for a day just to ride around. I met him through a friend in junior high. Me and him used to hang out a lot in that park with the big white arch thing where he used to deal H to all the junkies who hung there. I asked him what it was like to take H, because I seen him sniffing it, and he gave me a book to read, Christian F. I read like 4 pages and said, to hell with that, I hate books. He got mad and said I should learn something, but I wouldn't go near it again. So he says, screw it, I should learn the hard way then. He shot me full of H. I felt like I was gonna throw up on him. My stomach was dribbling around, and my head felt like it was separating from my body. I got real nervous until Matt told me to relax and not be uptight, and then I started feeling real good. The next day, he shot me up again and made a joke about that being my last free sample. When that freeze hit me, I was on cloud 9, 10, 11. I was free of everything that bugged my head out, like my mother, who was out screwing like a dog in heat, or my bad grades in school, or my older brother, who one day disappeared without even a poof, leaving only a pair of Pro Keds on the kitchen table as a goodbye. Nah, I wasn't thinking about nothing at all, just getting more sweet H and taking more trips into that sweet nothing land. I had to keep shooting after that. One time I bought some real bad shit from some guy I didn't know, a freaking Latin dude, and it was awful. I felt like if bugs were crawling all over and I couldn't stop scratching. That was the only time I ever got whacked. That was about a year ago that I turned on, I mean. And since then, I haven't gotten the sunken face or the bags under the eyes or the circles, neither. I look great. In fact, guys keep asking me out all the time, but I got my smiley, so I say nah. I'd only be like my mother if I said yeah.
You really read well. You're a performer too, aren't you?
No. you know. You grow up around it, so you're just able to turn it on, you know.
Is this story based on someone who you know?
Yeah. I've known girls like this. I've known people like this. A lot of the people in the book are based on real people, real kids, really. They're all kids, you know. So they're not like, you know, really old people experienced, but just sort of discovering this kind of thing for the first time, which makes it all the more tragic, I think.
Now, this story, did you show this story to the girl that it's based on?
I don't even know where she is, to be honest with you. It's loosely based on a girl that I knew, and, you know, how much of it is her and isn't, it would be, you know, it'd be hard to really say right off. But there is a lot of her life and the kind of struggle that she went through when, you know, she decided to have a baby, you know. It's a big decision for a girl. And again, like, I've never seen it written anywhere. I've never seen, you know, the kind of girls that I met when I was growing up, because almost all my best friends when I was growing up were girls, were going through this kind of stuff. And I felt that these girls were almost like heroic in a way, you know, the way that they had to make these heavy decisions and, you know, fight and claw to just survive out there, you know. I felt that was really heroic, and I never saw it written down anywhere. I never saw anybody really, you know, focus on it and give these girls the kind of attention that they deserved, or even more, that these kind of stories might inspire other girls, or at least make other girls think about the kind of decisions they're making, you know. I never saw it anywhere, and it was one of the reasons I think that got me to start really writing about it, you know, because I felt that they were like heroes, heroines.
My guest is Abraham Rodriguez. His first collection of short stories, The Boy Without a Flag, has just been published. We'll be back after the short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with Abraham Rodriguez about his new collection of short stories. You grew up in the South Bronx. Would you describe the neighborhood that you grew up in?
It's pretty much the same kind of neighborhood I live in now. I still live in the Bronx. You know, when I was growing up, when I was very young, there were just a lot of people, a lot of kids, a lot of families, you know, rows of tenements, and it was more of a community when I was growing up. Sometime in the 70s, they started burning everything. Everything started going. And then we had just, like, lots of abandoned buildings and empty lots and the usual sort of ghetto kind of thing, which a lot of people feel is cliche, but which is still going on, you know, the junkies and the drug addicts. And of course, when I was growing up, we had, you know, gangs. We had street gangs like the Savage Skulls and the Spanish Mafia and the Dirty Dozen and these kind of things. You know, the cats would have these little Lee jackets with the insignia on the back and all this corny stuff. And now that we don't have that, now what we have is, I guess, a little worse, which is just posses, which are, you know, groups of young kids who run around and usually heavily armed and probably three times more dangerous than when I was growing up. But It's pretty much the same burg. It's the same kind of experience. You got the same kind of wasted lives. You got the same kind of people out there on the streets doing the same kind of hustling, the same kind of criminal activity, the same kind of hurt, the same kind of pain. You know, it's just the same thing, you know, and you got your people in the midst of all of that who are honest, you know, God-fearing, hard-working poor people who are just trying to, like, bring up their kids so they don't end up that way, you know. Same old story.
What was your family like when you were growing up? Was your family together? Were both of your parents around?
Yeah, my family's pretty tight-knit. I mean, you know, we're still together pretty much except for my sister because she got married. But very tight-knit family, very supportive parents. I was kind of a spoiled kid, you know. Always at home. I didn't hang out on the street very much. I was always into books and the Beatles. So I sort of grew up in my house, you know, for a long time because I grew up in love with books and writing. You know, my father got me into writing because he was a poet and used to type a lot. This is the first sound I remember hearing when I was little. That's part of the whole Boy Without a Flag thing. You know, hearing the typewriter and really liking that sound, you know. My father used to use typewriters, big ones, used to rent them. And I just love that sound, you know, and I started typing. I just had to sit on his lap and type some. And then I just liked it so much that, you know, eventually I begged and pleaded for portable, and then I started bashing out my own kind of stories and things. But that was like when I was really little, like, you know, 10 or 11 years old. It's just a typewriter fixation, really. It's really all about typewriters, this whole thing, you know?
It's like your instrument.
Yeah, I just love them. I just love typewriters and manuals, mind you, not the electric stuff.
So your father wrote or writes poetry. Has he been published?
No, my father, you know, my father's always done the right thing. In essence, he's done what's always necessary. When he first came to this country, you know, he's a wide-eyed Latin kid. He went into the army right away, learned English in the army. He learned how to roller skate in the army. Hey, America, where else, you know? But after he got out of the army, he just wanted to get into all this kind of art stuff. He was into getting into acting. He got into radio. He worked in what's now Spanish radio. He was pretty much in the, you know, the bottom floor of that when it was just getting started. And he quit. He quit like a lot of the things he was into because the family, you know, his family was always pressuring him, saying, oh, you shouldn't be doing this artsy stuff. You should be doing something serious, like working the counter at Needix, you know, that's serious. Or getting yourself a full-time job, that's serious. So my father, little by little, gave up a lot of his dreams, you know. And one of the biggest dreams, I think, was being a poet. He used to write all the time. Well, growing up, I remember, I mean, I still have folders of his poetry, you know, Spanish stuff. Really romantic stuff about the island and women and, you know, Pablo Neruda type of things. And, you know, that's basically where I got it. He was like my big inspiration, but he didn't get published. He never pursued it. By the time that I was around, you know, he had already given up the idea of even becoming a poet, like being published and stuff. He just did it because he loved it. And, you know, it was, I think it was a form of release for him. And unfortunately for him, I picked it up right away. And so, you know, that probably created more problems for him, I imagine, because then he's the one telling me, you should do something serious.
So was your father supportive of your writing, or did he want you to do a quote, serious job, too?
Yeah, my parents are supportive. I mean, they've supported me when I wasn't working, and they've supported me, they still support me in many ways. You know, I mean, they're very supportive, but my father was really, I think it was just the fear of having me like end up sort of like him, you know, even though he wouldn't put it that way. But the idea that I would end up, you know, because I didn't pursue everything that I should have in school, for example, you know, making a career for myself in some serious way. He was always into making me become a lawyer or a doctor or something serious, you know, something money-making, something lucrative, so you don't have to worry about money. And I did everything I could to frustrate that. I just went the other way. I, you know, I just wanted to write and make music and do all the things that don't make money.
What was it like for you growing up, loving to read, loving to write, listening to the Beatles in the South Bronx, where I think people were much more kind of Physical, being tough probably was very important. I'm sure reading was considered pretty unimportant as a survival skill in your neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, I was pretty much a freak when I was growing up in the sense of, you know, see, like, for example, back then, you know, the early 70s, you know, rock and roll wasn't like it is now where, you know, you have Hispanics like rock and roll and everybody likes rock and roll. Rock and roll means like 8 million different things. You know, back then, rock and roll was white music. It was honky music. You didn't like rock and roll. If you were growing up in the South Bronx, you know, that wasn't your scene. Well, I loved rock and roll. I was into rock music. So I was a rock freak. Okay, I had the torn jeans. My hair was too long. I liked the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, the whole thing. You know, Alice Cooper T-shirts. I mean, I was really out of I was really out of my element. All right, I was really, really asking for trouble. And then on top of that, I liked books. All right, that's the worst. I mean, okay, you have no taste in music. Fine. Okay, we can live with that. But then you like reading and stuff. I was always walking around with books and stuff. The first book that I read, cover to cover, was William L. Shirer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Okay, come on, the kid must be cracked. All right? Even my teachers thought I was strange. You know, they were like, wow, this kid reads books. You know, you be cool around him, you know. So I was always an outsider in that sense. And that got worse as I got older. I mean, because, you know, in the sense of, you know, I read, I talked differently than other kids. Kids used to say, well, you know, I'm Jewish because, you know, my name's Abraham Rodriguez and because I use $10 words and because I talk with my hands. You can't see my hands, right? But they're moving. And they say, you know, well, Jews talk with their hands. And look at his nose. He's got a big nose. And, you know, so I was like a Jewish kid growing up, really. Even though I'm not Jewish, they used to think, oh, you know, he's this Jew guy, Jew freak. And you know, I mean, I started reading Philip Roth, you know, because it's true. I started reading Philip Roth, you know, all those parts in Philip Roth where he's saying, I was measuring my nose up against the table, you know, to see how long it was. And I'm doing the Jewish test, you know, because I'm saying, like, is it me? You know, it's a sort of identity crisis there that I went through with Philip Roth because, you know, he's the first real fiction I ever read because I was just reading history books and stuff. But, you know, I had a real identity kind of crisis thing. I didn't feel very Latin in that sense, and I grew up that way for a long time. I was pretty much alone, so books and records were really, really, you know, I used to hang out with books and records. That's how I grew up. And girlfriends. I had a lot of girlfriends, but not girlfriends like, yo, man, that's a fine fox. It was more like, you know, she's my friend. She come over to me, hey, Orlando hit me, you know, and I'm like, oh, why'd he do that? You know, you should find somebody that won't hit you. She's like, I love him. You know, it's this kind of thing. So I was a best friend. You know, I patted down her tears. I gave her a hug. Yeah, go back to him. You know, next time, don't tell him he's a fool. You know, it's this kind of thing. So, you know, that's where a lot of the stories come from, me hanging with these incredible girls. I mean, I knew a lot of incredible girls, you know, as friends. We weren't, like, involved.
So when you were a teenager and people were supposed to kind of be able to physically defend themselves and everything, what did you do?
Oh, well, I was smart. See, I could talk my way out of fights. I knew people who wanted to kick my butt, but, you know, I could talk my way around them. I mean, words were my thing, you know. So I could talk my way. I must have talked my way out of like 30 or 40 big major scrapes.
Is there one you can think of that you could tell us about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I knew this kid called Nelson who's I don't know where he is now, God bless him, but he used to be in the Savage Skulls, you know, and he didn't like me. He didn't like me for a long time. I don't exactly remember what it was that got him to really despise me. It could have been the Alice Cooper T-shirt. I remember that pissed him off. But, you know, he courted me one day in the lockers downstairs, like in the basement where they had the cafeteria. And he says, like, I'm going to, you know, I can't say what he said, but he was going to do it, I swear, because he, you know, once he said that, you knew he was going to do it. And so after school, you know, we all got together outside for this beating. You know, I'm sure they sold tickets and stuff. There's a little waiting line and everything. And he was going to beat the hell out of me, but I talked him out of it. I just told him, look, you know, let's be honest about this, you know. Okay, me, I'm just a wimp. You can kick my butt, you know. And I just talked him out of it. I started talking about friendship and life and I don't know. I even mentioned Hitler at one point, you know, Poland. I brought everything in, you know, because I could just talk circles around. And the guy's waiting for me. This was his mistake. He was waiting for me to finish. So he's like, yeah, that's true. all right, you finished yet? I'm like, no, because that's the preamble. And then I just go on into, you know. So finally, he just like, you know, we ended up shaking hands and all this. Because we started talking, I don't know how we got into English and stuff. But then I started saying, well, you know, I was talking to the teacher. And she says, well, you know, your English isn't that good. And he's like, yeah, I know. I got an F on my report. And so I say, well, look, man, look, I'll help you with the report. That's no problem. You know, I can help you with that crap. It's easy. Believe me. And so I ended up helping him out. You know, I ended up hanging with some Savage Skull guy because I could help him with English. So, you know, I found ways around it. You know, the whole macho thing and having to beat people up and all this and show your manhood. I sort of found other ways around it, you know. I didn't need into the whole thing, really. I just wanted to not get beaten up. But it wasn't that heavy for me. I don't know why, but, you know, I wasn't confronted with that kind of scene that much. And I mean, I'm probably playing it up more because I want to seem like real gutsy. But it really wasn't that bad. I mean, I never really, of all the fights I could have been in, I figure maybe one or two were like really serious. Mm-hmm. Everything else was just, you know, school kid kind of crap.
Right. You know, it's interesting. Like you say that you talk differently from most of the people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Most of your stories, which are about other people, are really written in the kind of street language that you don't necessarily speak yourself. But I guess you were listening the whole time that you weren't speaking that way yourself.
Yes.
And really picked up on it as a writer.
That's the prudential. That's the piece of the rock right there. Yeah, you know, you're always soaking stuff in. You know, when I finally got to college, I remember I was still writing. I wrote a lot about Germans in World War II and, you know, stories of the Eastern Front. This collection should be stories of the Eastern Front, you know. Just, I was infatuated with German soldiers and all this. And when I got to college, the first story that I won an award with was a story about a German sniper behind enemy lines. I remember meeting Ed Rivera, who's a Hispanic writer and probably my mentor, I guess, because I got a lot from him when I was there. And he told me, look, you know, I had written some. I had written Elba at that time, and I think Babies was already written. And he read some of it, and he said, look, you know, you should really write more about what you know about. You know, I mean, the Eastern Front is fine and everything, but come home. You know, it's basically, come home from the Eastern Front because the stories are all around you, and you can write them. You know, these stories that you wrote now, you know, you capture it. You can write it. You should look around you. And I started, at that point, I started to really think more about what I had in the South Bronx and the stories that there were in the South Bronx and how the stories were not being told. You know, there was nobody writing them.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, thanks. It was an honor.
Abraham Rodriguez, his first collection of short stories, The Boy Without a Flag, is published by Milkweed Editions of Minneapolis. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.